Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Silent blight, lonely blight, all is brown, what a sight, round yon cultivar looking so lush. Only foliage turning to mush. It's a fungal disease. It's a fungal disease. Silent blight, lonely blight, experts quake at the sight. Unknown pathogen, virulent strain. Nothing to be done spreads in the rain. Down the drain, 80 bucks down the drain.
From the little brick building on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a punchki's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere, it's The Mike Novak Show, the country's best deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every week and broadcast from the studios of WCPT, AM and FM, Chicago.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is sponsored by Locally Laid Egg Company, because local chicks are better. Go to locallylaid.com. And by Attack of the Killer Asparagus, the funniest book about gardening you will ever read. Go to aroundtheblockpress.com. He's a man with two green thumbs, which unfortunately puts him on the no-fly list. Here he is, Mike Novak.
You ready there?
Yes.
Stand by. All together now. One more time. Oh, come on.
Shit.
You did that on purpose.
Oh, darn it.
You did that on purpose. You do that on purpose every week. Because I actually do think you have a sense of rhythm. I really do.
I think you might be overestimating me a little bit.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Helen Kiernan. Good morning to the guy sitting opposite me.
Good morning, Mike.
Roy Diblick. And Roy, I mean, I'm just jumping right in here because Roy... Oh. Is a guy I've known. You know, I don't think I've known you for more than a decade. It's about a decade.
Probably.
Yeah.
10 years. Is that 10 years? 10 years.
Right. Most decades are.
I go by simple numbers.
Of course, some of my decades seem like they go on for a long, long time.
Yeah, 10 whole years.
Yeah. And Roy is, he's something special. And I mean, and I don't mean that in a pejorative way, Roy. I mean that in a good way.
That's good.
He grows plants.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Kind of all I've ever done, if I think about it.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing to think about. That's
since 78.
Yeah, and your stories are amazing. We're going to get to those today, but mainly, well, he's here for a couple of reasons. First of all, he's allowed in the studio because he actually listens to the show.
I don't miss too many. I enjoy them.
And I love it, the fact that you're driving around in your little truck usually in northern Illinois, southern Wisconsin, right?
Right. And just have you on Sundays enjoy the show and the conversations. And like I was mentioning, I think you put people together with thoughts. And that's sometimes things we're lacking is a clear thought about something.
I'm sometimes lacking a clear thought about something, but I appreciate it. And I'm glad that you do catch the show from time to time. Mm-hmm. And the other thing he has done, so that's one of the reasons he's in the studio. The other is because he wrote this book. What was it? When was the first version of this written?
I think in 2008.
Okay, because I talked to you about the first one. Gosh, back when we were on Pulaski.
Yeah. 2008 was published by American Nurseryman.
Uh-huh. Right. And then they went belly up.
Well, they sold a number of times. I'm not quite sure what they're doing now.
Well, they didn't go belly up. Yeah. They got absorbed. That's the way it works in America,
That's how some of the businesses become soaked up by other
I'm looking
companies.
For a very rich person to buy this show right now. Could we have people who might give us some money? The book was The No Maintenance Perennial Garden, and you should know that no is spelled K-N-O-W, as in the Kano Maintenance Perennial Garden.
Yeah.
Because canoeing your plants means less work.
Well, that's kind of how I got started. I after growing plants and actually being in retail when I was at Natural Garden back in the early 80s, everybody came in and they were attracted to the plants, and I think the plants were the draw because they're things they haven't seen before.
And you were kind of hoping that you would be the draw, but it would turn out to be the plants, right?
Work that way, when you have a decalp head on and long hair, people kind of—that's
true. You were a little bit of a hippie there.
Well, I just had I was clean cut, but I just let my hair go because it just felt comfortable.
Hey, look across the room, dude, right. Okay?
And I don't think there's anything wrong with feeling comfortable with who you are. I think that's a strength. So the more you can feel comfortable in your own skin and who you are and then love what you do, I think it's very important to have a joy for what you do. And I was mentioning earlier, I was raised in life by my mom and dad to earn a living.
In Berwyn.
I wasn't raised to make money.
Uh-huh.
And I think some people frown on that. They go, well, don't you – I'd care about money, but – when I realized I could earn a living, my first living I earned was by working with kids at Cabrini Green, and I loved that. We took the kids out to the Cook County Forest Preserve, and they stayed in cabins for 10 days, and it got them out of their environment for a while, and it got them to experience just a whole different set of environments and cultures and relating to each other, and that program was canceled. And then I took care of the parks in St. Charles for the only reason was I had a good work ethic. I didn't know how to drive a stick shift truck. I didn't know how to do anything.
But you knew how to grow plants.
Well, at that time, I didn't either.
I never
grew a plant. Well, it was work ethic. And I enjoyed it because my whole goal was to be outside. I had a simple goal in life to work outside. I just didn't want to be indoors. I didn't see value to being in a confined space as a human being. I think if you're healthy and vibrant and you've got thoughts, why not share them and share it with people and living beings outdoors? Be outside.
Yeah.
And then when I got to the park district, that's where I learned everything there needed care and maintenance. So if you don't know how to care and maintain everything, you see the slow, steady decline and replacement of it. And if you let that happen, that means you're spending wasted money. So when we looked at the ice rinks, the parking lots, the trees, the shrubs, I learned that I had to have so much attention for each area, and each area required care that I didn't understand or know, so I felt I better learn about it. And the first thing that hit me was plowing. The first time I plowed, at first it was too exciting to get in a big truck and just blast through the snow, donuts on your seat, coffee spilling because there were no coffee.
Woo-hoo!
It was just too much fun. But then I realized, who put these trees and shrubs here? I have no place to put the snow. So the people that were planning the parks and the parking island really didn't consider where you were going to put snow when it snowed in the winter. So then I had to come out with a dump truck and the front end loader and move snow away, which I really shouldn't be doing at a cost. So it made me think about plant placement. So you look at, maybe these shrubs, if they were 10 to 15 feet back and not in straight lines but in drifts, would give me more opportunity to place snow. So that was a great...
That's your design model.
Yeah.
Where can I put the snow?
Where can I put snow? Because everything comes into play. Everything
wow.
is a relationship to the next
thing. Well, that's how this starts. Okay, that's Roy Diblick, and he's going to have some pearls today, I'm sure. Otherwise, I'll kick him out the door.
I'll be gone.
He's my co-pilot for the show. We're going to talk about his book, The No-Maintenance Perennial Garden, which is published by Timber Press. They took that first book that was done by the Plantsman Association.
American Nursery.
American Nursery Association, sorry.
Yeah.
And expanded on it, and it's beautiful. It's a gorgeous book. This is there are 62 plans in here. You don't even have to come up with a plan yourself. You just take one of Roy's and you plug it into your yard in a 10 by 14 area. And that's the other thing. It's very manageable. If you like what you see, do another 10 by 14 area.
They connect up well.
Yeah.
So you can connect them up in each grid. I picked out, I believe it's 72 plants in the book. I think it's 72 plants.
74 plants.
74 plants that you actually
You wrote
have.
The book, Roy. You don't know how many plants
remember.
Are.
But there are plants you have to make the effort to kill, that you'd have to get up in the morning and say, I'm going to go out and kill Coreopsis, verticillata, golden showers. So what that is, that's a beautiful scenario because as you get up in the morning and don't quite know the plants you do own,
yeah.
at the same time you're letting them know who you are, the plants can introduce themselves to you. So it's like creating a friendship. The plants will be there till you figure them out. And they'll know that as you're figuring them out, that their life and their situation is improving because you're caring more about them.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not losing things and replacing things all the time, which is our traditional horticultural practice.
Yeah.
Which is weed, wood, chip, and replace.
You know, you have a – we're going to get to this one in a second because I got to introduce the rest of the show here. But you talk about what we consider – standard practices in gardens right now. And don't go into it because I want to get to this list and because I want to tell folks what's going on today. And that is Roy's here. As I said, he's kind of the co-pilot today. We'll talk about the no-maintenance perennial garden. But we also have other authors on the show. And I want to invite you to call in at 773-763-9278 or tweet Mike Now, at Mike Now. Or put something on Facebook, The Mike Novak Show. What are the books that you've been inspired by this year and that you think folks should have a copy of? Send us that information, and we will get that out as well. But after Rick DeMaio Weather, 9:45, second hour, Shauna Coronado, who's written a book called Illinois Getting Started Garden Guide, Grow the Best Flowers, Shrubs, Trees, Vines, and Ground Covers. She's also written one for Indiana, and the question I'm going to have for her is, what's the difference? Don't you get to write the same book twice, basically? I don't know. It probably not exactly, but there's probably something to that. But the thing about Shauna is that she has more, social media connections than any gardener in the visible universe, okay? She has mastered that. And I expect at least 200 new likes on my Facebook page by the end of the day, or I'm crying fraud, okay, at that point. Susan Lendroth will be in. She's written a book, and it's a kid's book. And Roy and I were very happy because we were both able to read through it.
Right, quickly. But it's very enjoyable.
It's called Old Manhattan Has Some Farms, EIEI Grow. Helen, I think you'll be able to read this as well. I think this is some... and we'll talk to her about why write a children's book. Well, I can understand writing a children's mm-hmm. book about teaching kids to grow. That's a good thing. But this is more about... Urban growing
farms.
And
it's very, very
and
cool.
It's for, like, you know, first graders. And we've got her. And then at the end of the show, kind of a surprise, a guy who called the show last week. Dude, I don't know if you caught last week's show, Roy, but I was talking to the Green Diva, Green Diva Meg, and this guy, Steven, came in, called in, and he was upset because he just basically thought the world was going to heck in a handbag and was rabble rousing. He says, I got to do something with my life. And I told him to go to OpenGov Hack Night and work with people who are doing apps for social remedies. Mm. And But then something else happened, and he wrote to me, and I'm going to have him on the show at the very end to talk about his week and what he did. Kind of interesting.
I'm excited about hearing that, too.
There you go. And that's all today on the Mike Novak Show. Again, if you got great books you came across this year that helped you with your, I would say, mostly gardening, if it tends into the environmental realm, that's cool. Call in with that, 773-763-9278. Roy Diblickless here. We'll get to him in just a second, so hang on.
Captain's log, stardate 42326.1. The Enterprise is under attack by an apparently hostile life form. Mr. Worf, status report.
They appear to be perambulating vegetables. We are being stalked by stalks of asparagus.
That is incorrect, Mr. Worf.
Mr. Data, be more specific.
Asparagus officinalis, or killer asparagus, was the subject of a very popular 21st century tome by the brilliant author Mike Novak.
Mike Novak. I'm familiar with his work.
Of course. Attack of the Killer Asparagus is required reading at Starfleet Academy.
Tell me more, Mr. Data.
He has been variously compared to Mark Twain, Dave Barry, and Gwynoch of Ningladore.
Captain, shields are failing.
Thank you, Mr. Worf. Mr. Data, options.
Captain, it seems to be available online at AroundTheBlockPress.com.
AroundTheBlockPress.com. What do they have to say?
It appears that Mike Novak is a slapstick every gardener, taking all our self-delusions, mishaps, and confusions and playing them for big laughs.
That's not very helpful, Mr. Data.
No, it is, however, highly accurate.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I've got great news about Natural Awakenings Chicago. We're now available throughout the city and suburbs, from Lake County to the Indiana state line. So if your sustainable business is anywhere in Lake or Cook County, we want you to be part of our magazine. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakenings than any other magazine to help lead happier, healthier, and greener lives. If you own a green business or offer healthy living or wellness products and services, you should be working with our marketing team to get your message out to our targeted audience. Natural Awakenings is distributed in more than 1,000 Chicagoland locations, and our readers are looking for products and services just like yours. Join us, won't you? We're online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good. Live simply. Laugh more.
Chief, believe me, you're in for a treat just as soon as Jimmy gets back here.
Great Caesar's ghost. What's holding him up? You know I can't work without a good breakfast.
Chief, Jimmy's bringing a box of Kellogg's Sugar Smacks.
All the more reason for hurrying. Confound it, that boy knows I like those new Sugar Smacks.
And he knows I do, too. And that's a cinch.
Well, here I am. Young man, if you spill those new Sugar Smacks, you're fired.
Golly, Chief, I hadn't opened up the box yet. But I'm going to now.
Well, I guess we all agree on Sugar Smacks.
Right.
Folks, don't wait. Get Kellogg's new Sugar Smacks. They're better than ever. Puffs of wheat, sugar toasted, and candy sweet.
You bet. Just get Kellogg's Sugar Smacks, brand new.
It's time to step in the green room.
Life's a garden, dig it. You make it work for you.
Should we get some Sugar Smacks there?
Commercial.
What you can't see in that commercial, and the best part of it is that they had George Reeve eat some of the Sugar Smacks. So he's got a bowl there. I mean, this is in a 60-second commercial. This is the way we used to do commercials. And he's eating the Sugar Smacks, and he can't choke it down because he's got to speak his next line, and he's trying to choke it down and get the next line out. It's hilarious. Oh, my goodness.
It's a good quiz question. What was the biggest movie George Reeves was ever in? Biggest party ever had in a movie. More famous people still watch it, no matter what age group.
I know. He was in, I can't remember. Okay, what's
Gone with the Wind.
That's right.
Every time I see Gone with the Wind, I go, here's Superman.
And that's the problem. And that's what happened. And that's, yikes. Yeah, that's the problem. Why? How did Superman get in Gone with the Wind?
What, yeah, how did they screen that role?
I don't know. Yeah. Roy Diblick is in the studio. He is the author of The No Maintenance Perennial Garden by Timber Press. Pick up a copy as soon as you can. Give it to a friend. Keep it for yourself. It's not that expensive. And it's a nice, fancy, glossy book. You got to like that.
Well, they excuse me, they put it together really nicely. And I think, they gave me a good opportunity. They liked the thought. That was the whole idea behind it. It's not just a book with plants A to Z.
Yeah.
It was a book that looked at plants independently and how they could be put together in relationships.
Well, that's the whole point of this book. You picked the 74 plants that you think work very well together.
They live in our region.
I mean, they don't all work with each other, but you know, you have groups of those plants that work
together.
Each
plant can be put with other plants to really create good relationships, kind of like people.
Let me read this thing you wrote in the book that is, I think, is hilarious. You can actually use that cough button if you want. You just hit the box there. It's the box there in front of you. This box, yeah. You just hit that thing where it says off on the side there. That's okay. Maybe I'll do it for you. So Roy wrote this in the No Maintenance Perennial Garden. These are the practices you list. And listen to this, folks. Now, tell me if you out there listening, if you do any of these. Rototilling every new planting space regardless of site conditions. Incorporating large amounts of manure and compost into every new planting space without regard to plant selections and preferences and existing soil conditions. Placing plants so far apart they barely touch each other as they mature. Applying 2 to 4 inches of wood chip mulch annually without considering the product source and its effect on perennials. Deadheading immediately after bloom simply because that's what's done. Staking, caging, or tying up any perennial that dares to begin to lean. Cutting back everything and removing all plant debris at the end of the growing season. Neatness freaks. Watering too often and too much or too little. Using too much fertilizer and pre-emergent herbicides. Planting only the newest selections, believing they must be superior. Trusting that the newest market products will save time and effort. Here's my favorite. Fearing all insects. You must fear all insects. And the last one, following tradition blindly. You know what? You're a heretic. Mm-hmm. You are a heretic, Roy.
I think sometimes we don't question practices very well. We just can't do them because that's what we've done. So when you take it from a plant perspective, especially the herbaceous perennials, all these plants have grown up without any of those practices on earth.
You write in the book, and you've said this, because I've heard you speak before hundreds of times. You've said, there's no plant on this planet that evolved growing in a bed of wood mulch.
No. It kills them all.
It kills them all,
It kills them all.
And people think they're protecting their plants. So explain the whole wood mulch culture.
Well, it gets back to having a relationship to the plant. If you look at the plants themselves, they evolved happily and healthily on Earth with little human involvement. They did have involvement with Native American tribes and through burning, through collecting and harvesting.
Yeah.
But they weren't cultivating the plants in an agricultural or horticultural way. So through their harvesting and burning practices, they actually enhanced the development of native plants through those practices. But those plants evolved on Earth, one living intimately with each other. And through that intimate relationship, they could reseed and spread into each other's company and not inhibit the growth or the health of the plants themselves, and they all lived and became healthy living in their own debris.
Their own leaf litter. Yeah, the debris that is, okay, you got a plant. It dies back at the end of the season. The leaves collapse. They get crispy or mushy or whatever they do, and then they fall at the base of the plant. And all of us want to say, oh, we got to get that out of there.
That's what we're trained to do.
Yeah.
We're trained in various reasons. There's various reasons that has happened in our culture. You know, it's English gardens, French garden. There's a number of ways that we can look at that. But if you ask the plant itself, you said, look, Spirobolus, what do you think here? Hey, you, Spirobolus,
is this something you want us to do, take away your foliage all the time and remove it and put wood around you? Well, the Spirobolus, if it could answer, which I know you might all think is ridiculous, is, well, no. How am I going to push new growth into accumulated wood? I can't. Every time a flowering stem flowers, that stem dies and new growth comes off the side of the plant, off that shoot in the crown. If a plant can't move outside of its own growing point into new earth, fresh new earth, and it's stopped by layers and layers of accumulated wood, the plant lingers. And then the plant will linger and be beautifully lingering for 3 to 5 years, and then it dies.
Well, okay. You've got to understand, though, that people think they're doing the right thing because they often have good intentions at heart, which is they've been told that you put down mulch and that conserves moisture. And it does, in fact, to the point of killing the plants.
It's not much the moisture conserved is necessary for those plants. Because one way of a plant conserving moisture, if you look at prairie dropseed and a lot of the bunch grasses, what they do, it's not actually the leaf or the material that builds up. They actually harvest moisture. They harvest it through the dew in the morning. And all that moisture harvested on their foliage runs down their foliage back into the earth. So it's like a self-irrigation system. The bunch grasses are responsible for bringing moisture back into the earth. And the other thing is their deep, extensive root systems that allow moisture to come up into the earth.
So, all right, explain what you mean by a bunch grass.
A bunch grass is I forgot the cough button, sorry.
Yeah, it's all right. It's right there.
I see it.
Now do you see it?
Off. I see off and on and a delay active.
Anyway, do you want to read the kids' book again for a little bit?
Maybe I could sit over there again and finish my tea and be so happy.
And then talk to me after the radio show is over, right?
Yeah, okay. So anyway, a bunch grass, they're short grasses, and they don't have to be native. They can be European. They're just grasses.
Oh, you just – more heresy.
Well, actually,
more
I
heresy
think
because there's all right. There's two ways of thinking here, and one is, as you say in your list here, the only good variety is a new variety because it's obviously superior because it's been bred to be superior. Mm-hmm. And then there's the other side, which is if you plant anything but a native, you're killing the earth.
That's silly. I mean, if people have that approach, you only have so much time in life. And if you have that time, what can you do to your fullest extent with your fullest love and passion? Because everything we do comes out of love. So if you take everything you do and it comes out of love and you really love native plants and you really believe more and more of those should be really everywhere, the thing you can do instead of being critical and hurting people's feelings by telling them they don't know what they're doing by having a lawn or going to the Lurie Garden and criticizing the Lurie Garden or a Chicago Botanic Garden.
Who would criticize the Lurie Garden? Have you actually
oh, yeah.
heard? Really?
Two old ladies came and just were furious it wasn't a prairie. And I shouldn't say old ladies. I'm an old man. But I think if they
– Well, it takes one to know one. There you go.
If they took that energy – I look at energy and their passion and said, where can we place that energy to do good instead of hurting other people's feelings by being critical of something that they are not fully conceptually aware of? You look at the people that want help. Who wants to help the most? It's the villages, park district, and cities. They all realize they're mowing open space they don't want to mow anymore. They just don't have the money to do it.
And you're talking about lawns.
Lawns.
Yeah.
So what their concern is they don't have a way of marketing prairie to be something beautiful to the neighbors and people that live there because they're afraid of mice and rodents and anything that hides in tall grasses. So if we got together as a group of people, think about, and this is what I talk about in the book, it's all about community. It's not... Nothing else can be healthy if we don't have a healthy and thoughtful community. So if we take that energy and get together and create a way of marketing and showing all the people that, say, live in St. Charles, Illinois, that the best thing that could happen to their park system is for a prairie to go in there. Maybe it'd be 3, 4, 6, 7, 1,000 acres or more of prairie. And if they reduce that mowing, they have 27 times a year they can put that money to other things. And then when the prairies go in, everything all the prairie people want, the birds, the butterflies, the pollinators, think what you can do with 1,000 acres instead of criticizing a homeowner in Naperville who happens to love dahlias and delphinium and isn't putting in Retidiba pinnata. We don't want to criticize people who are doing what they know how to do. We can talk to them and appreciate what they do and say, here's other things you can do.
But if we take that energy and look at hundreds of thousands of acres of mowed parks that can all connect up together in the Chicago area, and we market the beauty of that to all the people that live there. And I have an example of this working. The Village of Fontana. The Village of Fontana has put in their own prairie. And they put that prairie in because they have a prairie whisper. They didn't hire big crews and companies. And sorry, it's not that I'm saying don't hire big crews or companies. But if you just have a prairie whisper, his name is Tom Vanderpool.
Mm-hmm.
And he sets up the recipe. And what he does, the one thing he fails to do that a lot of other prairie people get caught up in doing is trying to give everybody something quickly. A prairie you can't put in like a turf.
No.
So what Tom does, he simply starts the prairie process. And he puts a seeding mix. You put that seeding mix in, and that's the beginning of your prairie. These are the early reestablishing native plants. But you know what they do? They allow other plants to reestablish with them year after year after year. They don't put in Indian grass and big bluestem. And all of this is done by grandmas and grandpas and moms and dads and children holding hands and seeding every year. The garden club in Fontana collects a seed along roadsides. When I first met the women in Fontana, they had these beautiful meetings, and they would serve you bread with the crust cut off and an olive and a toothpick in it. And those were fun meetings. And now those same women are wandering roadsides, harvesting seeds with Tom, collecting and cleaning the seeds, and their community is sowing their own prairie. And in 7 years, they have more diversity in that prairie than you see in most of the prairies put in by high-end professionals who have nothing but green and yellow.
I was just going to say, you've hit on something really important, and I have said this at garden clubs now for several years, and you're right that a lot of the garden clubs, and let's face it, a lot of them are ladies, mm-hmm. and they've done wonderful things to beautify communities, but the mission has to change.
Right, and it's going to.
And it's not just wandering the side of the road collecting seeds. It's also planting vegetable gardens and teaching mm-hmm. the next generation how to grow food. They have the skills.
Right.
They know this. And mm-hmm. a lot of them have the land to do this as well. I mean, it's something I've said on the show before about churches. It's like most churches have land. What do churches have? They have land. They have a congregation, you know, so mm-hmm. able bodies. They often have kitchens
and
in the basement.
Always good people. A church is filled with good, caring people,
uh-huh.
like a community.
Theoretically.
Right? Well, there's always some.
Theoretically. But you can, if you can harvest those people to work right. the land, you can change mm-hmm. everything. You can change the whole country that way.
Well, and that's what I mean by time. And so instead of being critical and criticizing and taking this side or that side, if we realize what's our one goal that we all share, and that's to create a healthy earth. And a healthy earth, in a simplistic way, is something that we all can relate to, we all can share, and we can all, the things we love to do, all tie together. Vegetables, and that's, I mentioned to Mike, I'm going to be working with Christy Weber on some of the schools in Chicago.
Wait a sec. Good sponsor of the show. There we go.
Right. And Tuesday, we're going to talk about integrating perennials with vegetables.
Which she has done this year.
In a wonderful way. Yeah,
in Millennium Park, mm-hmm. of all places. And there was corn. They had corn.
Right.
You can hit the cough button if you want. Do you need to drag that a little closer to you?
It's hard to reach. I'm treating the cough. They're not sure why I have it. I think I know, but they're looking into it.
Oh, it's because you were nervous about being on the show.
Well,
right?
It could be that, and Ben's had this cough for.
Because you get liquored up before you come on my radio show.
I was trying to do that too.
But it was a little too early. The bars were not open yet.
Yeah, couldn't
on a
quite
Sunday.
Go down to Sportsman's in Berwyn.
You know, back when we were downtown and it was, you know, 6 o'clock on a Saturday, there was plenty of opportunity for that. That's Roy Diblick, as you can see, who has no opinions about anything. Just grows his plants. He just goes out there and grows his plants. His book is The No Maintenance Perennial Garden, KNOW Maintenance. By the way, you talk about people changing, one or two people making a big difference. I'm looking at online here a photo of Charlotte Edelman, who planted a prairie in the Centennial Park in Winnetka. Is it in Wilmette? Actually, I know it's one or Wilmette. Sorry, And she was showing, I had a photo of her showing it to Winnetka people. But, you know, there's a person who said, we got to do this. This has to be done. But my question, I guess, to you then is, you know, speaking of Millennium Park, which is not a prairie.
No.
So people should understand. Right. It's
an artwork. It's a form of art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Designed by a number of people who took into account that, yeah, we're going to have some natives. Yeah, we're going to have
60%.
Some 60%.
60% native plants, right?
Yeah. And but a lot there again, there are people who would say that's not enough. It's got to be 100%.
I look at simply when you have each situation is you set goals and objectives. So if your goal and objective is to put a prairie in, then you probably wouldn't use Perovskia or daylilies, or you wouldn't use salvias. So,
Perovskia being Russian sage. I'm just trying to help my folks here. A lot of them are going to go, what?
So you would use all native plants. But the thing that sometimes what we fall short with native plants is we want to attract all these birds, butterflies. There's books written about it. And sometimes they're not defined quite as well. You don't know what birds, what butterflies are pollinators, but they all show up, or all that's available.
Well, in my yard, it's all English sparrows, but
well, it's like something shows up.
10,000 right? English sparrows and the occasional pigeon and a befuddled squirrel. Okay, that's what happens in my yard.
They got to go somewhere. They got to find a home somewhere.
Even the befuddled. I saw yesterday. It was just hilarious. I'm looking out the front door. And a bunch of those English sparrows are out on the sidewalk in front. Mm-hmm. And they're all flocking on something, picking at something. And I'm going, what the heck? What is that? And it's like a chicken bone that's my neighborhood. Okay, great. Stray chicken bone on the sidewalk. Yeah, that's my neighborhood. And then so I'm watching for a second. They're all flocking, trying to get the little bit of meat off. I'm going, is that good for you guys? Should you really be attacking that? But suddenly... they eat worms, too, so,
yeah,
you know.
It's something I can digest.
Maybe. Yeah. It depends what kind of sauce is on it. I see this squirrel. He's nearby, and he's going, hey, what's that? Hey, what's that? And he goes, boink, 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 and he bounces over, and it just grabs the thing and runs, and the sparrows are like, hey, that's ours. Come back here. So he, like, runs up the porch, and I'm like, get out of here with that bone. I don't want you leaving that bone here.
That's cool.
So I chased him down the stairs, and he went up a tree.
Urban nature.
That's urban nature. That is urban.
And that's something we don't want to change and appreciate, because that's what urban nature is.
That's what it is. It's chasing chicken bones in the neighborhood.
Chicken bone falls to the ground.
It might have been a rib bone. I don't know. It looked like a chicken bone, but oh, dear. A couple more bits of heresy that you address. I'm not sure where to go yet, because... at this point, because we could talk about some of the plants you love, but I suppose people could just pick up the book.
It's good, I think, to understand, for everyone to understand their own direction. If you start with your own direction, and it's simply how you live. If you realize you live and you have a family, you love your family, you hug your children, you live in a neighborhood where you have friends in your community, you take an active role in your community, your garden's no different. If we look at plants, what we've decided to do for some reason with plants is never let them share intimacy with each other. Our goal is to keep them 3 feet apart and forever separated by ungodly amounts of wood.
Well, because they might get cooties on each other.
Yeah, there's something that's
going to
happen.
Some truth to that. Mm-hmm. They think that the insects or diseases will spread. And again, people have been told plants need air circulation.
Well, that's for a specific case. Like if you're dealing with maybe hybrid tea roses.
Yeah,
but what we do is we've collectively taken all those horticultural practices and put them together for everything, and that's what I mentioned to some people. We treat everything like a tomato. No matter what you are, you're going to get the same attention a tomato gets.
Which means the soil is too rich,
too much
water, too much fertilizer.
Right. Everything's too much.
Right. And I've said this, and I've partly because of what I've heard from you, I go into. Rants about how fertilization is overrated, and it seems to people think that's the answer to everything. My tree looks bad. Should I fertilize? This plant's not doing so well. Should I fertilize?
Right. It's just an uncertainty what other options there are or other. Like at Millennium Park Lurie Garden, the effort was made to keep the soil poor at 3% organic matter. And when the soil's at 3% organic matter.
And let's say that normally it's around 5%. And some people who get OCD on this, will get it up to 10%.
Oh, 10%.
Yeah.
And every perennial you put in 8 – I had 8 to 10% organic matter at Northwind, which I hope you all come out to visit. Throw that in.
Yeah, we throw in a plug for Northwind Perennial Farm out there in Burlington. I'll keep mentioning that. Okay, there you go.
Okay. Anyway,
NorthwindPerennialFarm.com, by the way. Okay.
We're our last day of Christmas is today.
Is that today?
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean the last day today?
Well, we close after today. We're open for 2 weeks. Our barn becomes
a
Christmas barn.
It's the 14th,
Roy. Oh, it's too cold.
It's not cold.
Oh, we don't have heat.
I was at the Morton Arboretum last night, and it was 50 degrees.
Oh, it just seems the correct day to close. People are elsewhere.
Do whatever you want. See if I care.
So, and the high organic matter causes perennials that have lived for their whole eternal time on Earth in low organic matter, they become Americanized. They get overweight and chubby and fall over. So when you look at all the perennials, they get too long, too tall, too floppy, and they die quickly because the soil is too rich, the crowns get too big, the plants get too big, the flowering declines, and they just get leggy and floppy. So I noticed that when I was at Natural Garden, when I was leaving there, getting a north wind, the mushroom compost raised the organic matter content of my soil about 8%, and everything was leggy and floppy and messy. So when you keep your soil lean and poor, and I don't mean poor by new construction type of soil that has
been absurd.
Yeah. I mean poor by the conditions the soil exists
Let's say normal. How about normal?
Yeah, I can say normal. Normal soil.
Normal soil.
That's what I call average in the book.
Although I got Rob Carthol, who's just tweeted, he said, let's bring it up to 25% and quit messing around. There we go.
Right. Just get it up to the highest point.
That's right. Just make it all organic matter and watch things just keel over.
And organic matter is great, but you just have to define what your crops are and what you're anticipated to grow and what the growing needs are of the crops and plants you're growing. It goes back to goals and objectives.
Yeah.
It's not this broad brush of doing everything for every plant. And that's just what we've gotten into. And that has happened because of market-driven products. I mean, when you look at, if you read gardening magazines.
You try to get me in trouble here, right?
I'm not saying all products. I'm just saying in the 1920s and 1930s, when you read gardening magazines, there was nothing more joyful, no matter what they wrote about, whether it was vegetables, shrubs, trees, perennials, or annuals. It was joyful reading. It was all about how much fun that person was having.
Mm-hmm.
When you read magazines starting in the 50s and 60s, it became yard work instead of joyful gardening. So what made it yard work in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s instead of gardening and joyful? Products. They were selling you products that came out of World War II, chemicals, nitrogen, all these fertilizers.
Mm-hmm.
And if you use these products, you can get out of the garden quicker. So they called it yard work. So we had a generation, three generations of children, and that's why I love that book. We've grown up thinking outdoor work is work. It's yard work. When actually, it's one of the best places to go to be your own best friend. Is out in the garden.
It's therapy.
Yeah.
It's healthy because you burn calories. You stretch. You don't need yoga if you're in the garden. Well, you actually may start with yoga so you can get in the garden. But it certainly helps. Just all those things. It brings a connection with the earth and a kind of peace of mind.
Right. It does everything for you. It makes you healthier. And we have all these people going to gymnasiums and clubs and getting workouts and taking pills because they want to be healthy. When I give talks now, the first question I ask the group, I said, how many of you want to be sick? How many of you are looking for your next illness? And people look at me like, this is a talk on plants. But I get everybody to agree that all of us want to be healthy. None of us want to be sick. There's not a person I know. So when you can make the earth a healthier place to live on, and you can do it, not because you're buying products or all these things that you're believed to need, simply because you're being more thoughtful about how you relate to the plants that you're planting based on your goals and objectives, whether it's a tomato living with spirobolus or peppers planted in Cecillaria with salvias. All that's healthy and beautiful based on goals and objectives and the direction you take with it.
That's Roy Diblick. What you do is you wind them up, you turn them. But you need to sip some tea. I'm going to let you do that. He's here for the rest of the program. We're not totally focused on that book. We're going off to other books. But he's just going to sort of help me out here and you be the sidekick, right?
Yeah, I can be Tonto. Is that okay to say Tonto? I like
whatever
Tonto.
You ought to yeah. say.
Jay Silver.
I don't, and I don't have any Tonto and Lone Ranger old-time
commercials. Oh, there's Pancho. I like Pancho. Cisco and Pancho?
There you go.
Yeah, it could be Pancho.
Yeah.
Oh, all Cisco.
Right. Pancho sounds it. All right, there you go. Roy Diblick. Rick DeMaio weather coming up in just a couple of minutes. Now, radio, as you know, is, or maybe you don't know, is a medium that is really much more interactive than you think. Not only are you able to pick up the phone and talk to me in real time, but I can actually see you sitting there in your cozy little kitchen sipping your coffee and starting to sweat a little bit. Yeah. No, not because the coffee is too hot and you're not sweating because I can see you, which is a little creepy, but because it's December 14th and you don't have a clue about a Christmas gift for at least half a dozen people. Am I right? Gentle listeners, I have three magic words for you. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. This is not a gift that's going to be done and forgotten by the end of Christmas Day. Au contraire, mes amis. A subscription will remind your friends and loved ones of your brilliance throughout the year. Not only that, but the recipients will be learning things about gardening all year long. Roy, you've actually been quoted in that magazine.
It's a great magazine. Wisconsin Gardening, along with Chicago,
but in particular, very, Chicago, yeah, and they're
Chicago,
all part of the
region,
part of the regional chain of magazines. Mm-hmm. But in the one I'm in, Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, and you're going to be jealous of your friends because they're learning stuff unless you have a subscription yourself. Now, of course, there's still my column on the inside back page, kind of like the worm in the apple, but. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Give a subscription or get one for yourself this holiday season. Go to ChicagolandGardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600. We will get out of the green room right now.
In the green room.
You dig?
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545. Or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
This is Mike Novak. Enjoy local food all winter long at Winter Farmers Markets, hosted by 15 different Chicago faith congregations on select Saturdays and Sundays from November through March. Your purchase of local sustainably produced food helps support regional farmers. The markets are organized by Faith in Place, a nonprofit that inspires people of diverse faiths to care for the earth through connection, education, and advocacy. Go to faithinplace.org and click on Winter Farmers Markets for a schedule and to learn more.
Silent night, holy night, all is calm, all is bright.
Nothing says the holidays like Tom Waits. All right, let's bring in Rick DeMaio, meteorologist extraordinaire. Sing along, Rick.
Give me several large containers of alcohol, and I think I can sing a lot of time away pretty well.
Absolutely, yeah.
Mix in a little eggnog, of course, and, you know. What was that song? I think I don't never heard. Is that I just got out of general surgery and anesthesia? Is that it?
That's just Tom Waits. Are you familiar with you're familiar with Tom Waits, right?
Oh, yeah. He's got a couple of great songs about the weather.
Does he?
I think so. Is it? Or maybe I'm thinking
maybe you're thinking of somebody else. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard Roy earlier on the show, but I started thinking about you because I know you do predictions for snowplowers. And for a while.
Yeah, they've had quite the vacation for the last 2 weeks, haven't they?
They really have. Good and bad. It hasn't been that cold, and we haven't had any snow, but a lot of people, and you know this, Roy, because you used to do this, and people in the business, that's their winter job, is people who grow plants often get behind a snowplow.
They count on this.
Go ahead, guys. I'm sorry to interrupt.
What I was going to say is that back when Roy was working for St. Charles and he was plowing snow, he told the story about how he couldn't find places to dump it because of
what was happening last year. Yeah.
Yeah. But this is because of where the trees were planted. Now I'm trying to imagine what it was like last year. Wow. So.
Well, the problem last year was that the snow was on the ground for so long it became like concrete, and. You know, a lot of places like your supermarkets, your big box stores, your banks that have limited number of parking spaces. I shouldn't say the big box stores; they have tons of parking spaces. But in your smaller urban areas, they wanted to get rid of that snow so they can go back to having 38 spaces as opposed to 27. And that was, I think, the real tough part is how to get rid of snow that's basically, sublimated, evaporated, condensed, and refreezed into something that we don't know what it is. And then, as you were talking earlier about the squirrels, they find things under there that they they hid, back in, late November. They go, oh, here's that chicken bone that I was gone on. It comes full circle. It really does. The urban environment in the wintertime is very interesting to watch. I love it.
I do, too. And so here we are in this warm pattern, which you predicted, but early on, okay, I'm gonna hold you accountable here.
Yeah,
you said wet, wild, and white,
an early start, and we certainly had that, and now here's the break, and then we'll get back into wet, wild, and white, probably in about a week and a half. And
really?
It definitely looks like it changes back to a cold and snowy pattern. Beginning probably we'll get a little bit of white stuff around here Tuesday night into Wednesday. It's not going to stick, but it'll definitely snow. But this warm-up that we're enjoying right now basically goes away this coming Tuesday and Wednesday and really doesn't come back. So as is noted, almost like the month of October acted like November. November acted like December. And it's almost like you get these, we used to call them January thaws, which kind of went away about 10 years ago when our climate started to change. But this is almost acting like a January thaw, where you get these massive storms hit California, and you end up getting these huge, large chunks of subtropical air come all the way from like 10 to about 25 degrees north latitude. A lot of people like to call it the Hawaiian Express, which is, I guess, true because there's only one island out there, but it's not truly all the way from Hawaii. But in any event, it moves across the mountains, it sinks, it dries out, it warms up, and as long as you have sunshine, you easily get to 50 to 55 degrees. And, people walk outside and go, oh, my God, it's great, it's warm. And usually comes just about every January for about a week to 10 days. And I think this is almost like our January thaw coming in the month of December, but the pattern definitely goes back to being cold once we get into probably the third week, if not the fourth week of December.
Okay, well, timing is everything. The third week would be Christmas, and the fourth week, you would miss it. So,
Right. And I mean, from a standpoint of long-range forecast, whether that's 7 to 14 days or 10 to 12 days, that doesn't really change too much. But if you really want to think about how dramatically different this weather is now compared to last year we had, overnight low temperature of 6 below on the 11th. We were zero on the 10th. We already had 3 or 4 inches of snow on the ground. It was, remarkably different, and all signs were indicating, the cold was going to continue. But there were always some signs that kept saying, it's going to change, and it never did. It's like the cold and the snow just kind of fed off one another. And typically you see that even when you have warm weather. Sometimes the warm weather feeds off itself, and that's pretty much what is happening right now. The great thing about the warm weather is that we don't have any snow on the ground to have to worry about melting it. Otherwise, we'd be probably in a foggy, soupy mess right now. Even though we've had some of those days recently, this is about as good as it gets for the middle of December. Not record-breaking weather, but definitely something that, when it coincides with the weekend, obviously a couple of weekends before Christmas, everybody's trying to get out and do stuff and hang light bulbs and stuff like that. This is great. Welcome to with open arms, I guess, the best way to say.
Well, and let's talk real briefly about that storm that hit California the other day. That was I got two things. One, that was really interesting. I turned on the Weather Channel, and they did not name it.
I noticed that, Mike.
It was
really weird because
all right,
they named the storm on the East Coast Cato, And all I kept looking for was the Green Hornet, you know. But they named it Kato, which was it sounds ridiculous after a while. Oh, that's Kato. And then all of a sudden you get this massive storm hit the West Coast, which is probably the biggest one they've had out there in probably about 5 years. And that's only because they haven't had any storms. So there's really nothing to compare it with. But the bottom line is they didn't name it. And I was like wondering, oh, that's kind of strange. Is the Weather Channel not broadcast beyond the Continental Divide? So I don't know what the deal was with that. And I haven't seen anything on, you know, on some of the blogs or websites that says that they're no longer naming storms. So I don't know. That seems kind of strange.
Well, if they had named the one on the West Coast, Kato, everybody would be looking for OJ.
That's a terrible joke.
Sorry.
Yeah, but notice I laughed at it.
Yeah, I know. You like terrible jokes. You're like the king of terrible jokes.
Yeah, I know. I've often reminded
about that.
Don't remind me on the radio. Yeah,
but back to that storm. Yeah. It was impressive. That was really impressive.
I think what's making these storms more impressive is that we haven't had anything like this in a long time, and truly there was a tremendous amount of subtropical moisture that got entrained in it. So you had, you know, you had a lot of rain that fell over that part of the state, particularly San Francisco southward, about a week earlier. You had about 2 to 3 inches of rain, so the ground actually got softened up quite a bit. And when you had the second band of rain come through, the flooding was a little bit worse. If that would have fell just on bare ground, you probably wouldn't have had as much flooding. You had the flooding, you had the rain, you had, you know, some of the high winds in the mountains. But you know what? I have to say, I've seen these things before. They're not uncommon for California to get something like this, you know, once every 5 years. And then you had a weak F0 tornado develop in the Los Angeles area. I think it was, let's see, Friday.
I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, it was a real weak tornado. And typically what happens when you get these cold air funnels develop over the ocean and they move inland. If you look at the L.A. basin, it almost is like the mountains to the east and the mountains to the northwest kind of go from like 4 o'clock to like 10 o'clock, okay, on a 12 o'clock, you know, 12 number clock. And they kind of rotate from the east, southeast to the west, northwest. So when these storms get pushed in from the west, they have nowhere to go, so they spin up. And it's very common to get weak tornadoes move in the L.A. basin, and, you know, obviously it got caught on camera. You had mudslides, so I think with the advent of cable and social media, everybody's talking about it.
All right.
But, yeah, it was devastating to some degree, but not completely uncommon.
All right, you got 30 seconds here for a forecast.
Sure. So mid-50s today, low 50s tomorrow with rain, but then it cools off on Tuesday back into the upper 30s, a little bit of light snow. It looks like we have 3 chances of light snow, one on Christmas Day, one on the 30th, and one it looks like about early on early January. But the pattern definitely changes beginning this Tuesday.
All right, Mr. DeMaio, we will talk to you next week. Have a great week.
Good.
All right, take
care.
Bye-bye. In the second hour, more books and more Roy Diblick here. I hope you stick around. Give us a call.
Glad to be here. Thanks, Mike.
Glad to be anywhere.
That's true.
Next hour, stick around.
Welcome to the second hour of the Mike Novak Show, the country's best deep green gardening and environment program, heard every week and broadcast from the studios of WCPT, AM and FM in Chicago. This hour of the Mike Novak Show is sponsored by Locally Laid Egg Company, because local chicks are better. Go to locallylaid.com. And by Attack of the Killer Asparagus, the funniest book about gardening you will ever read. Go to aroundtheblockpress.com. Here he is again, Mike Novak. Well, here comes Santa with his 8 reindeer.
Do you, do you, here's something that you don't know. Santa's gonna do the mumbo. All right. I'm just, it's
cool.
It's all Christmas hits all the time. Oh, I was going to play one more thing, and I didn't play it before we get in here, but let's just play it now. Here we go.
Control room to Moonship.
Roger, Control. Everything A-OK.
5, 4, 3.
Stop. Hold the countdown.
Ready. Blast off.
Hey, George, where'd you go?
I almost forgot my Etch-a-Sketch.
Etch-a-Sketch? What's Etch-a-Sketch?
Just the greatest toy this side of the moon. With Etch-a-Sketch, you can sketch almost anything just by turning dials. Right to go up or down, left to go sideways. Back home, Etch-a-Sketch is the toy the whole family has fun with. Take it in the car, play with it on a plane, or when you travel by train. Etch-a-Sketch is fun any place. Sketch almost anything just by turning dials. Turn upside down, shake to erase, and sketch again.
George, head off the retros, George. Prepare to land.
Don't bother me now. I'm playing with my Etch-a-Sketch. Etch-a-Sketch from Ohio Art. Etch-a-Sketch from Ohio Art.
Take it on, it on a plane or use it in a campaign.
It's still available. You can get an Etch-a-Sketch.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it, that the Etch-a-Sketch is still out there? Yeah. We got a couple of comments. That's Roy Diblick, who is from Northwind Perennial Farm. It's their last day
today. Open for Christmas. We reopen mid-April, and I invite everyone
to
come
out. That's a long time after Christmas.
It goes quickly.
Yeah, it does.
You turn around, and it's May, and you're off and running.
Missed the first hour. We were talking about his book, The No-Maintenance Perennial Garden. We're going to get to Shauna Coronado in a second. I got a tweet from Annie Haven out in California, who listens to the show. She says, not much rain here at 3/4 of an inch. At best, they're happy for every drop they get. Mm-hmm. Drought is still happening. She's right in the middle of the drought out there. And it's something you haven't had to deal much with in the Midwest.
No, but it's a direction we're going at with my plant selections. Because if you look at one thing about Northwind, we have more plants that nobody wants than any nursery in the Midwest, mm-hmm, because I grow things that are supplemental to each other. I don't grow fashion plants where you buy the plant simply because it looks good on its own. The industry promotes fashion plants, and usually that's what you see in all the new spring catalogs or all the hybrids that come out that really have no knowledge of how to live in our region. So they're trialed not by the companies or the corporate horticulturalists, are trialed by you. So when you buy them and you find out they don't live here, usually the professionals know they're not going to get blamed for it, because you're going to blame yourself. Oh, I went on vacation. I forgot to water. I don't have a green thumb. And none of these plants, if they lived, you'd see them everywhere. So when you look at all these new plants introduced every year, you have to ask yourself, how come I don't see them in public space? And they're not planted in public space simply because they don't have genetic knowledge of how to live in our region. So that's the beauty of living regionally. It's not that you shouldn't try things, because that's how I try everything. But I'm right now growing Carex albicans. Nobody would buy. I won't sell one next year. But Carex albicans is a beautiful supplemental sedge. It has soft green texture. It doesn't spread like Carex pennsylvanica. It stays in a nice mounding clump. But it stays green as Carex pennsylvanica.
Yeah, I don't mind that Carex pennsylvanica spreads. I mean, it's a beautiful plant.
Well, it spreads, but it spreads communally.
Yeah,
other things can live with it.
And again, we're talking, if you're not up to speed with some of the language, Carex
sedges.
And if you don't know what a sedge is, think of a little mounded tuft of grass, mm-hmm, except that it has little inflorescence on the end of it when it, the bloom, and I'm using air quotes here, and they have different size leaves. Some are strappy, some are
various widths.
You can have 1/16 different textures.
And that's what makes the sedge community beautiful.
I planted a bunch of sedges in my yard this year.
We're using them to replace wood chips. Every tree and shrub is going to be underplanted with sedges. And because they're communal, you can put bulb layers under them. You can put blue hostas, jack and pulpits, trillium. But they will help eliminate weeds. They'll keep weeds out of the planting, and then you mow it once a year. And the sedges will live in their own debris.
Now, if Ron Cowgill is listening, he loves you, because he's the chief cook and bottle washer for Mighty House here on Saturdays on Chicago's Progressive Talk. And his way of pruning in the fall is to run a lawnmower over everything.
That's what we do.
And now he's going to hear this and go, what? See, I've been doing it right all along.
And we use mulching blades. And that way, if you look at the, if you look at cost and labor, to put wood chips around your home every year probably costs $70 a yard or $80 a yard installed. So if you can save so much money per year by not putting wood around your house, which isn't benefiting anything, and you plant it in the living mulch with sedges or grasses, you can mow those. It creates a closed community. And by creating a closed community, you cut down the foot candles of light hitting bare soil, and weed seeds don't germinate.
And that's part of the deal. It's like, you know, when folks ask me about lawns and natural lawn care, I say when you mow higher, if you mow your lawn higher, if you, you know, you like lawns, it is its own herbicide and its own mulch. Mm-hmm. And that's because the not as much sun gets in there and it prevents the weed seeds from germinating as much. And, of course, with the taller grass, it keeps moisture on the soil too. So,
well, turf has been under attack and will continue to be under attack forever. And there's merit to everything that we discuss. But some way, there's areas where it's not that you want to get rid of turf completely. It's just asking the question, how much turf do you need? And then when you can define why you need it, maybe you play croquet. Maybe you want to lay on the grass with your kids. There's a lot of reasons ahead.
In our yard, there's enough turf so that we can look at the garden in bare feet.
There.
That's it.
You know how much you need.
Yeah,
so it's
just
defining need instead of having too much or too little.
Exactly. And the other Ron Calgill just tweeted, yay! Okay, dude, you've been doing it right. What can I tell you? You've been doing it right all along. And there's another comment that we're not going to address right now, but a tweet that was in reference to something you said last hour. Did he just say peppers and cicillaria?
Yeah.
Okay.
Peppers and cicillaria.
All right, hold on to that thought. We will get back to that later. But first of all, I want to go to the phone line and bring in Shauna Coronado. Shauna, how are you?
Hello. I'm your reporter from New Orleans today.
All right, tell me about New Orleans. What do I need to know about New Orleans this morning?
Bourbon Street is fantastic. This morning, my breakfast was
bourbon
and shrimp with etouffee sauce. Oh, it was delicious.
Wow. All right.
And
I think Roy and I...
Shauna, how you doing?
I'm good, Roy. I haven't talked to you in forever.
It's been a long time since the flower show, I think. It's good to hear from you.
And Shauna is the author of a book called Illinois Getting Started Garden Guide, Grow the Best Flowers, Shrubs, Trees, Vines, and Ground Covers. And I note, okay, here's my first question. And it's kind of, I'm kind of sucker punching you here out of the gate.
Are you sucker punching me again? Come on
once
now.
Once again. You wrote one for Indiana. So what's the difference between a book you write for Indiana and one you write for Illinois?
It's very similar. The intros, of course, are different. I grew up in Indiana.
Well, there's the difference.
I really understand. I grew up on a farm in the middle of Indiana. That's where I learned how to garden. And then now I live in Illinois. So they asked me to do both books. There's 250 full-color photos in the books. And then there are also guides on how to garden. And like I said, they're very similar. So you didn't get me out of the gate. We're all good.
Yeah, okay. I figured you
had. That makes these books a little different than your traditional gardening book. It's not labeled organic. Yeah, there's nothing on there that says, hey, this is only an organic book.
No.
And yet the book is truly based on growing all natural, using soil amendments that are all organic, and trying to really focus on the concept of growing your garden, your containers, and your landscape a little healthier.
Yeah, I noticed that when I was looking at the book. When you tell people to get fertilizers, you say go buy an organic fertilizer, and it's, you know, you get your message in that way. You don't have to be
exactly.
You don't have to be overt and clobber people over the head, like I do sometimes. But you know, that's me.
I'm all for clobbering and tackling. Both of those are really good. We're all good. No, I enjoy gardening so much, and when people come to me and say, well, you know, it's not fun for me because it's too hard. I'm like, there's something that you're not doing with the soil. It always goes back to making sure that your soil is prepped. And I use every leaf in my garden. You know, this year we mowed all the leaves and then blew all the leaves back into the garden soil.
And so trying to find ways to teach people how to do the soil and, you know, really start from the foundation up and grow right is part of my goal.
You said the word leaf blowers.
you hate those.
and what I did is I grabbed a rake, old school, and went into my yard and just raked all the leaves that were on the lawn into the garden.
Interesting thing, I was eating in Germany. I went to a sustainable conference in Germany.
Yeah.
And I was out in the hotel eating breakfast, and there was a guy outside who was cleaning the streets, because most people eat in restaurants out in the street.
Right.
And I couldn't hear the blower. So I ran out there. I couldn't figure out, why is that blower not loud? And they're required to have mufflers. All their blowers run as quietly, you can't hear them.
Wow. Oh.
So we don't have that requirement in the United States. We have no regulations on any of this stuff, and we just get used to it.
No, we don't. Some people do not get used to it. I'm one of those people. All right. Just for a second here, I don't know if you've heard this before, Shauna. It's the leaf blower song, and I'm not even going to remember who did this. Have you heard this?
My motel room, 8 o'clock in the morning. Good thing I don't have a gun. Leaf blower, leaf blower, holy, holy. Leaf blower, leaf blower. Good thing I don't have a gun.
Yeah, there you go.
There's you on that. Oh, that's awesome.
It's good.
They need. I get upset with anything that's gas oriented. I don't mind the electric tools that we have out there, but I think why do we need to create more exhaust? I'm concerned about our air quality, particularly in major urban areas. It's not a good thing. So trying to reduce that, I don't have a lawn, truly.
No, you really don't. I mean, looking at your yard and you see the pictures of your garden, you've pretty much sucked up all the lawn into your garden.
It is. It's all garden now. I do have native plants in the garden, but I have a mix, of traditional, what would be considered a traditional, ordinary garden plant compared to native. But I also believe in doing that front lawn vegetable garden. I plant as many vegetables as I can. Last year, we donated 150 pounds of food to the local food pantry just from growing in my front lawn. And that, why aren't we all working together to do more of that, where we're sharing what we grow and helping people in the community with it?
I don't have that answer. Do you have that answer? Anybody got an answer in the room? Anybody? Anybody here? Why don't we have a... No, it's.
We need more.
I was just gonna say it's a good question, and it's partly because some people really do think that a lawn in a couple of ewes is landscaping.
Well, they got other things to do,
and they got other things to do. Yeah,
there's other stuff they have to.
Yeah, but some people don't have other stuff to do, and they still think that a lawn and some ewes are landscaping.
They're happy as can be.
Let's. By the way, you should know that the Illinois and the Indiana, for those of you folks living in Indiana, and there are a number of them who listen to this show, it's by Cool Springs Press, and you can go to coolspringspress.com and just type in Illinois Getting Started Garden Guide, and it will pop up. Now, I have to ask you, this is kind of a standard question when people do a book like this. Did you happen to learn anything that you just went, wow, how come I didn't know that before?
I did. I learned that there are more poisonous plants that are sold at garden centers than I ever dreamed. I mean, everything from digitalis. I mean, there's like a long line of plants. I was very concerned when you list a plant in my book. I wanted it to also say if it was edible or if it wasn't. And lots of plants are edible. I mean, even sweet potato vine, which is, what we see in all the containers and everything in the summer, that's edible, not just the root. The root doesn't taste very well, actually, because it's a starchy thing.
Right.
But the leaves are edible, and you can use them kind of like grape leaves when you're cooking. So I think that the biggest surprise came to me is a few things that were edible I didn't expect, and of course, all the poisonous plants in our garden. I love Amy Stewart's book on the poison garden.
Yeah.
And so that was really interesting. I love doing all the research for it.
Now I'm trying to remember her name, the name of her book.
Wicked Plants.
Yeah. A great book by Amy Stewart. But, you know, one of the things you discover in this business, indoors and out, there are more plants that can kill you than more plants that are going to feed you. All right?
It's absolutely true.
It is. It's crazy. And people go, well, you can't have that plant because your dog will eat it. Well, you know what? Your dog's probably dead already, or it should be. You know, if your dog's not dead already, don't look at me like that, Helen. Helen's like,
oh,
what? What did I say?
I love my dog.
I know you're. And is your dog dead?
I hope not. No.
And sometimes we give the animals a little credit because they actually know what to eat and what not to eat.
They do.
So they're very bright about it.
You know, we send out all these warnings of, don't eat this, don't eat that. And I'm thinking, how many people are out there trying to eat it? You know, you mentioned the sweet potato vine, Shauna. And for years, people have asked me, is it edible? Can I eat that tuber? And I say to them, how desperate are you for potatoes? It's not exactly – potatoes are not exactly –
it's not a good potato.
Right.
It isn't. It doesn't have a delicious taste. It is edible. If you were starving, you could probably use it.
Yeah, but the problem is, even if you were starving, what do you got, two of them in a container? That's not going to make much of a meal for you.
No, but you know what's really good is – and I included it in the book – is ornamental edibles. And for years – people avoided eating and growing kale and Swiss chard in the garden. Why? They're wonderful plants.
Oh, kale is a magnificent
plant. They're great in
containers. Yeah.
They're just terrific all the way around. And so in the annual section, I included vegetables that were really ornamental. You know, you can't beat dinosaur kale. It's beautiful.
Yeah. It's not the toughest, though. One of the things I noticed is that this year we had some, we had that real early cold weather and that cold snap, and we still had a bunch of kale growing in our community garden. The dinosaur kale was not as tough as the curly kale, I found, but some of it I think is still going. I mean, it survived the freeze, the deep freeze, and is snapped back. It's just crazy. And kale has so many nutrients.
Is kale perennial?
And there's so many colors of kale. You could plant an entire garden of kale and have it all look different in the design. I do purple kale, and purple kale grows nearly 6 feet tall in my garden. And that's my secret. I don't really fertilize a lot organically. I don't fertilize. I really concentrate on the soil. I add rotted manure to the vegetable garden. And that seems to make a huge difference for all the leafy vegetables.
You know,
I love it.
Right. And that's what we're talking you probably missed it because you're in New Orleans. But
partying it up.
Roy and I were talking earlier about fertilization, and you need to know the plant. Does the plant need it? And if it's a vegetable, there's a good chance it will. Not always, but, you know, with the vegetables you're talking about, they love that extra fertilization and they love the manure. But other plants that you might grow, as Roy said, they love poor soil, and you want to treat them.
What we believe to be poor.
Or what we think as poor soil.
Yeah, the plants actually are thriving.
You know, you see this so often. Somebody buys one of those. We were talking earlier about Russian sage, and they bring it home. They put it in this, in total compost, it's part shade and it's really protected. And then they overwater and they wonder why the thing flops.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
It flops and then it dies. And then you got this one that somebody stuck out on a street corner and it's baking in the sun and it's the happiest thing in the world.
And it's there for years.
And
years.
And it just tells you something about those plants.
Shauna, I have a question. Are you going to be at the Chicago Flower Show this year?
I am. I'm speaking several times at the Chicago Flower
Show. Oh, excellent.
So they have me out on the main floor, and they also, on the Tuesday of the show, I think that I'll be in one of the small rooms. And I'm going to be talking. I have another book coming out because I just have all kinds of time to write a lot of books apparently. but I have another book coming out in February called Grow a Living Wall. And that teaches everyday people how they can grow living walls on their balconies. And what's cool about this is that the different systems, you can make your own system or you can buy a system. But the thing is that some of them allow you to plant more than 30 plants in a little over a square foot area when you're talking about floor area. So it really is a cool way to grow new things. And that's what I'm going to be talking about down at the Chicago Flower
Show. Very good. Yeah, presentations are great.
For people who don't understand what a living wall is, why don't you give us a quick definition?
Well, a living wall is a system that grows straight up and down, and it can be standalone. It can be a wall on its own, or you can attach it to a wall or fence and have the plants grow. Now, it used to be that the only way you had a growing wall was hydroponic. Right. It was really a water based. It was complex system. It was harder for the everyday person to really grow a living wall. But the living wall systems that I've included in this book are mostly soil based. What gave me this idea was I was standing at a garden center holding a window box, and the window box was like 24 inches by 7 inches square foot area, just a tad over a square foot. And when I saw that, I'm like, holy cow, what if we stacked 5 of these on top of one another? Then can't we grow, you know, more than 1 square foot of food in a square foot area? And indeed you can. So some of the systems that I have are in the book that I featured are really, they look like window boxes stacked on top of one another. And we have homemade systems so that people can do it themselves, or, again, you can go out and buy a system. The soil is the secret, again, in a container. I used my container formula mix. Roy, what mix do you use when you plant a container up?
I use a mix I have with Midwest Trading does it for me. It's pine fines, peat moss, and sand. And then I use a slow-release fertilizer in the containers.
Got it. So you have, with the sand in there especially, you do have strong drainage.
The whole key is drainage for me.
Yeah, it's definitely drainage. In a living wall system, I encourage a heavier soil mix because sometimes when you raise it up above the ground, it gets more air and therefore dries out more often. So to have a really successful garden, I encourage using more compost and manure in the mix in order to grow a more successful plant. And it works. I've grown living walls for about 5 years now. And so I tried out many different systems and finally decided on the plants that I would plant for the living wall book. So all last year I grew, I think we have 22 systems in the book with photos that teach people how to put it all together.
And that comes out when?
That's out at the end of February, beginning of March. So just in time for the Chicago Flower Show.
Yeah. Before I let you go, one of the oddest things I've seen recently is the drone tour of your garden.
Everyone's like, how did you get the little drone? It's so cool. It's from the sky. Please go out and watch the video. It's so cute. This little drone, a man came to my house. He owned the drone and had a little GoPro attached to it.
Wait, he just showed up and said, hey, I got this drone. Hey, can I take pictures of your garden?
Exactly.
Was he from the Obama administration? That's what I want to know. What was the deal there? Sorry.
The deal was I went to my local, there's drone clubs in the Chicagoland area.
Oh, boy.
And I went to the drone club and said, hey, would anyone come out and film with me? And they did.
And so, I've got the link on my website. If you go to MikeNovak.net, go to this week's show and find Shauna Coronado's name down there. It says right there, if you want to see what her house looks like from a real drone, and it is a real drone. And what's weird, I was just going to say, you can see the shadow of the drone in the shots when you're getting the tour of the backyard. About the garden.
You can. We tried to edit that out. You couldn't because, you know, it was too sunny that day. But what's cool is that you see the living walls on all of my fences, the balcony garden. You see, I have a front lawn vegetable garden, a behind the fence native plant garden, and you know, a whole 180 degree view of everything. It was so much fun to have that guy come out. And now, of course, since we've done this drone video, next year I'm going to have to totally rebuild all the gardens so we can do another one, don't you think?
Just keep the thing away from my yard, okay? I don't want any drones.
We're going to shout out your weeds.
No drones in my house. I'll be throwing pitchforks at it if it appears over my place.
You're going to shoot me down, man.
I'm not a gun guy, so I'd be throwing rocks. I'd be like a caveman there.
Awesome.
All right. So if you want the book, it's called Illinois Getting Started Garden Guide. And again, Cool Springs Press. I've got the link on my website if folks can't write it down right now. But you can always go to Cool Springs Press and pick it up. And I'm interrupting your wonderful breakfast, obviously. So I got to let you go.
Well, I'm telling you, I'm going to drink a hurricane for you this afternoon before I fly back.
A whole hurricane.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, as I mentioned earlier, if I don't get at least 200 new likes on my Facebook page because of this hit today, I'm disappointed, okay?
There you go. Come on, people. Like him. He's marvelous.
Get your minions out there. I want 30 new
followers, right?
on Twitter as well, because you're the queen, okay, of social media.
Oh, it's a ball. I love what I do. And so we're going to come back. I'm going to meet with you in the spring because we have all kinds of garden things to talk about then, too.
All right.
Thanks for having me on the show, my friend.
All right. Enjoy your trip down there. We'll talk soon.
Bye, Shauna.
All right.
See you in March.
Bye-bye.
Bye. The Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Roy Diblick here in the studio with me. That was Shauna Coronado. We've got more books. Again, you're welcome, 773-763-9278. Maybe nobody reads anymore. There's some truth to that. And I haven't seen people post their favorite books online. So
I brought one in with me.
I think we got a few tweets earlier about books.
Really? Well, I missed them. You got to track them. You got to alert me. I'm here. I'm doing the interview here. You go follow the Twitter folks and then I'll take care of Roy here. But Roy, you brought a book.
It's somebody a person I really enjoy. His name is Wendell Berry.
Yes.
And
yes,
he's written numerous books, poetry, novels. And he wrote one of his books that came out. It's just simply called What Matters? ? And it's the economics for a renewed commonwealth. And basically it talks about his views of economy and relationship to community. And simply, I'd like to just share this one part at
sure.
the beginning. I have to find, I had it marked. And if I can read this, I've never read on the radio, so this will actually be something.
It's a first.
And it's cool. I'm 61 years old, and I'm still doing things I've never done before.
It's always a good thing.
So it says, and this is Wendell Berry, and it's called Money Versus Goods. My economic point of view is from ground level. It is a point of view sometimes described as agrarian. That means that in ordering the economy of a household or community or nation, I would put nature first, the economies of land use second, the manufacturing economy third, and the consumer economy fourth. The basis of such an economy would be broad, the successive layers narrowing in the order of their diminishing importance. And I thought, there's how we all live now anyway.
You think so?
I think we want to. We want to live, like I mentioned earlier. We all,
I think, want to but earn we don't life. Have it that way.
But we're not.
It's
set
not.
Up that
I
way.
Mean, it's no. The way it's set up now is that the economy of manufacturing is everything. It's like, right. and if we're not helping the people running the businesses, then nature, screw it.
Well, we take nature first because we can't help it. We don't know it, but we can't help it. We're still not that far removed from. We're part of nature.
Uh-huh.
We sense it when we see sunsets and sunrises. When we take trips in the country, we stop and pull over. When we see a deer, we're still connected. But the part we get lost on is when we look at large corporate groups, and not to cut them down.
Yeah, but you're saying what we're connected to nature in the moment, but we don't prioritize it.
But every moment to moment, we're still connected.
We're still connected, but we don't. When we use our higher function, which is how are we going to plan for our future, we don't take it into account.
We don't look beyond the next moment too much.
Yes.
Yeah. And
we're supposed to be the sentient right. beings that can do that. We're not doing it.
And the good part for me, I think, is I'm working with a lot of young people, interns, and people coming out of school. And I think that's what they're looking towards. And this new generation.
You said doing new things. I'm going to become an intern for you and slam in some of your Sicilia and peppers together. How's that?
Well, that's kind of direction we're going. Is there's
older folks? There's a lot of them out there that who need these kinds of jobs.
Well, yeah, you look at there's a lot of young generation, a lot of people coming, especially out of some of the practices like ecology and even landscape architecture. A lot of the landscape architect students now coming out of school realize they were misled in their practice when they took 4 years of school because they were never required to take any classes concerning plants. So they can go 4, 6 to 8 years to get a master's or a doctorate degree.
That seems insane.
And yeah, but that hurts my feelings because that means the group of people who have the highest practice to make the earth beautiful, the landscape architects, really have no regard for plants because they don't have – and it's not each individual. Each individual architect loves plants. I know landscape architects that cry when they see plants. But when the practice says – you're not required to take any classes to increase your knowledge and awareness of plants through 6 to 8 years. That simply says plants don't matter to me. And so how can anything in any design be successful if the plants are simply put in willy-nilly based on what you find in a magazine or a catalog? And then who pays for all that? We all do because we have to replace it all in 8 to 10 years. We don't have any ongoing long-lived systems of planting in place. And that is changing simply because of time and money. The clients are demanding more. So everything
are they
done,
getting smarter? Are the clients getting smarter about this?
Yeah. They're using Europe as a model. The Germans, the Dutch, the Belgians.
Oh, no. Throw it out, man. Not Europe. We are America. That European stuff. Socialism, baby.
They've modeled all their direction in planting from our prairies.
Isn't that interesting
how they've taken
our prairies? And
it's not their reap.
But you know, and you look at a guy like Pete Udolf, who designed a lot of the Lurie Garden.
Right.
Yeah. He's taken the idea of the prairie, but he's transformed it. It's not per se. It's not literal. It's an artistic interpretation of our prairie.
Interpretation. He adds more theater to it.
Yeah.
With the use of perennials, which isn't bad because the first living creature you have to attract to a landscape are human beings. If human beings don't find it beautiful, it's not going to be successful. So before you worry about bees and butterflies and birds, you have to attract human beings or what they'll do is rip everything out if they don't like it. And all the birds and butterflies that found a home in the plants you put in, people are going to say, well, that doesn't look good to me and take it all out. So, and that simply can be done by composition.
Yeah. That's Roy Diblick, by the way, who's the author of the No Maintenance Perennial Garden. And you should pick up a copy of the book if you want more of these pearls and you want to get a list of plants that will work together in your garden. All right. We need to get to our next author, who is Susan Lendroth.
Super.
Yeah. However, here are some more reasons why you should be getting locally laid. Eggs. Thank you.
I was going to pay attention.
You were kind of caught off guard. When I said that, it was... Thank you. Thank you very much. I'll be here all week. Actually, I'll be here till 11. They use non-GMO corn in their feed. They're sold only within a farm's locality to reduce food miles. Hens outside are on rotated pasture every day, weather permitting. They're strong yolk integrity. I had never heard of yolk integrity before. That the strong yolk integrity in whites, they stand tall in the cooking process. Their eggs, you'll like this. This is another one. They have, their eggs are micro-brewed. B-R-O-O-D, micro-brewed. Yes, thank you. In sustainable flock sizes for better hen health and happiness. And their name is funny. How can you not like a company with a sense of humor? Mm-hmm. For a full list of Chicagoland retailers, visit locallylaid.com. Locally Laid, because local chicks are better.
Captain's log, stardate 42326.1. The Enterprise is under attack by an apparently hostile life form. Mr. Worf, status report.
Inexplicable, Captain. They appear to be perambulating vegetables. We are being stalked by stalks of asparagus.
That is incorrect, Mr. Worf. Asparagus officinalis, or killer asparagus, was the subject of a very popular 21st century tome by the brilliant author Mike Novak.
Mike Novak. I'm familiar with his work.
Mike Novak was one of the smartest, funniest people in the horticultural world of the 21st century.
Sound red alert. Shields up. Tell me more, Mr. Data.
He has been variously compared to Mark Twain, Dave Barry, and Edgar Allan Poe.
Edgar Allan Poe, author of my favorite children's stories.
Captain, I am attempting to access a copy of the masterpiece. It seems to be available online at aroundtheblockpress.com.
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 Yes, Mr. Watt.
Yes, Captain. Aroundtheblockpress.com.
How many times can I say it?
Trying to weather the housing market? Consider replacing your windows and siding. Remodeling Magazine says they're some of the nation's most popular projects today.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling and energy needs. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I have exciting news to share. Natural Awakening, Chicagoland's only monthly magazine dedicated to healthy and green living, is now available throughout Cook and Lake Counties. Natural Awakenings features articles about fitness, local food and drink, healthy kids and families, even healthy pets. We also cover gardening and environment, sustainable building, energy conservation, and green living. We include local news and a calendar to help you stay connected. I can guarantee that in each month's issue, you'll discover a new health tip, a tasty recipe, a new business in your neighborhood, or something that makes your life better. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Ongi-di-dongi-ya. Anche se non è vera, la storiella vi piacerà. L'uomo di neve, zuccherino, zuccherino,
con la pipa in bocca ed un cerin, stava in mezzo ad un giardino.
Un bel bambino una palla gli lanciò,
nel cerino proprio lì lo centrò,
e il cerino si incendiò.
You know, the sad part about this is I have no idea which language this is. It's just, it's here. Whatever. Hey, welcome back to the Mike Novak Show. Before we get to Susan Lendroth, maybe somebody will tell me what language is. Let's take Fran. Fran, you got a comment about books?
Gentlemen, hey. I have very carefully winnowed down my choices to three. All three of these books are great for small gardens and large acreages, which is what I have. Number one is The American Woodland Garden by Rick Dark, D-A-R-K-E.
Wow.
And Doug Tallamy's book, a classic, Bringing Nature
right.
Home. And Prairie Style Gardens by Lynn Steiner, S-E-I-N-E-R. I had never heard of her before, but I just got it just recently from the library, and I bought it, which proves that I value it. Because I'm a cheapskate.
Yeah, you go to the library. If you're getting a book then that you saw at a library, yeah, you must really care about it. Well, those
all
are
all three.
Yeah, well, that's fabulous. I'm of course familiar with Doug Tallamy's
book. They're all good. Yeah.
So you
plus
yeah.
Doug and Rick teamed up to do a new book together.
I've already ordered it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hear that it hasn't come out yet, has it?
Yeah, that's been out since.
Oh, has it?
Summer, I think.
I miss everything.
Yeah.
I've learned to trust those two, and so it's the first book I've ever ordered without previewing it. Only one. I'm a cheapskate.
You said that. Now I'm starting to believe it.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
The neat thing about these three books is that they aren't fanatical about native plants, but they certainly do preach unpersuasively the value of having native plants in our yards. Wild Ones, I'm a member of Wild Ones and Nature Conservancy, they also do the same thing. They don't get crazy on you. They say plant a few native plants, and that will probably persuade you to plant more, but you don't have to have a yard exclusively of these natives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm kind of where Roy is. If the plants work together, but there all I know is that there are people out there who will just say no. They reject any idea that it's not completely a native. And the problem is, what's a native? Then you got to start to define that. Is it in 150 miles? Is it in a 500 mile region? You know, plants, what is it? What is a native?
Plants really didn't understand a mile or 2 miles. They all migrate. Every plant you put in the ground. If you go out into, say, the Kettle Moraine and you take Carex pennsylvanica, each group you find is genetically different. There's no plants are genetically the same wherever you go. Their genetics have changed because they've wandered the earth as their temperatures have changed. Everything has diverse qualities to it. So what we do is we make rules, and we make rules in horticulture simply because we don't know what to do. So we make a rule. And I've got a handout I give to people now. I just say there are no rules. There's none. As long as you understand how a plant lives on earth, if you know its growth rate and its growth habit, and if you know how it gets to be a young child to an adult, if you understand the direction it takes from going to be a young child as a young 3.5-inch or 4-inch plant that's a year old to become an adult stage, if you understand that, you never have issues. Other issues are very few.
And by the way, the book that you were talking about is The Living Landscape, Designing for Beauty and Biodiversity in the Home Garden by Rick Dark and Doug Calamy.
Yeah, that's very good.
So it's called The Living Landscape, if folks are interested in that. Fran, I got to let you go, but great suggestions. Thank you so much. Always great.
Yeah,
good to
good
hear
books.
From you.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. And let's go to the other line and bring in our guest, Susan Lendroth. Susan, good morning.
Good morning.
A little bit earlier there. You're on the West Coast, right?
Yes, I am. Somehow I was put as a New York City resident on your homepage.
Oops.
It's live from New York, but...
Oops. Sorry about that.
No, that's okay. It's just the title of the book.
You know what? And that might have been my fault. I mean, because I knew that we were calling the West Coast, and I'm wondering. No, I think it might. You know, it just might be because it's Old Manhattan has some farms, and I think a lot of people would say, okay, well, why did you start with Manhattan rather than Old Los Angeles has some farms?
Well, for one thing, the syllable count.
Yeah. And everything, it's got a scan, right? It's got a scan.
It does. You need some meter there. So I had to leave out a lot of cities, though the book does cover more than Old Manhattan.
But it's got Chicago because Chicago scans. Old Chicago has some... Oh, wait, I've got the lyrics here. Old Chicago has some roofs. E-I-E-I grow. And on those roofs are beds of herbs. E-I-E-I grow. You're laughing at me, Roy. You don't like my singing? With some basil here and some mint sprigs there. Pick some chives, add some dill, string them by our windowsill. It all scans. Mm-hmm. Old Chicago has some roofs. E-I-E-I grow. Thank you very much.
Well, indeed it does. In fact, Old Chicago, or rather New Chicago, you had very early... greening of the roofs there. I think City Hall planted it back in 2000.
Yeah, that goes back a while. I'm not sure. Somebody said recently that we were at one point the number one green roof city in
the United States.
In the United States, and that might not be true anymore. I don't really know. I haven't checked that. Maybe. Hey, Helen, can you do a little check on that? Maybe. Can you see me? Hi.
I know you have
Helen, you listening to the show? How are you?
We've got some.
Oh, she's got the phone.
We've got some really big ones with the McCormick Place. Is a good.
I know, but you know, it's just a matter. You know, and everybody wants to compete. But so, Susan, this is a children's book, and what age group are you shooting it for?
This is for a young age group, though older children like it too. I've done readings, and the older ones like to sing along. Because it uses a nursery rhyme that kids start enjoying as early as 2 or 3, this easily can be for children who It's designed for children who are being read to by their parents or their teachers, and actually being sung to. I mean, how many people don't know Old MacDonald Has a Farm? So easy to sing along with the lyrics, and the kids can chime in with E-I-E-I Grow. So it is a participatory book, if you will.
True. That makes sense. Have you been doing well? Is it doing well?
Well, as someone with a published book yourself, you must know you don't get any stats for months and months and months. So I can say that I know been added to several library collections across the country and even in some overseas. It is certainly well received when I have done readings and when the illustrator, who lives up in Seattle, when she and her husband have done readings, because her husband is the one who contributed the song version, which is downloadable with an app by just scanning a little barcode on the book.
Yeah, it's right here on the book. If I knew how to do that, I would have scanned it, but I've never investigated. This shows you how lame I am and how mired in the 20th century I am still. I forgot what I was going to say. I was just totally thrown by that. What I was going to say is about selling books. And in my case, it's, you know, whether you like it or not, you're selling seven at a time. Basically, it's the way it works for me. You know, you go one place or another place and you just sell as many. You know, you never stop hustling the book. That's kind of the way it works. Unless you're Roy Diblick and you have a really, really fancy book that Timber Press put together. What prompted you to do this, Susan? Do you have children or did you just get a...
I do have a daughter. But she is now in college, so...
but she loves the book, I'm sure.
Well, she supports her mom in her writing, you know, even if she has grown beyond the picture book stage herself. But, you know, and certainly we did try a container garden when she was younger. We live in an apartment in the Southern California area, and although I do have a patio with a lot of greenery, it gets a lot of shade, so it tends to be more tropical plants rather than the edible variety.
Uh-huh.
But we tried a container garden out in a sunny spot, and can't say we were so successful. I think we made some wrong choices about which seeds to plant, but she did enjoy the process.
It's all about the process, as Roy has been saying all day long here. And but you must have had some inspiration to get kids to understand that they can grow stuff in their cities, that around them they don't necessarily have to deal with concrete, you know, sidewalks and porches and that sort of thing. That's an inspiration, and that's a good message to tell these small kids.
Yes, well, in my case, most of my books come from me just seeing something, not starting from scratch saying, I would like to write a book about. Something always makes it click. And in this case, it was reading about a rooftop farm in the Manhattan area, and I just happened to start a little hum to myself, hey, Old Manhattan has some farms, and I realized, wait a minute, what a great idea, but I don't want to limit it to New York. Because I think sustainably grown foods and eating local and introducing early growth of plants, organics, et cetera, to kids at a young age was so important that it should be something that has a more national reach, and in this case international, because I included Toronto as one of the cities.
Yes. So. You got Toronto, you got Atlanta, you got your Chicago, as we mentioned, and the White House, you got the old White House growing vegetables as well. So, if you've got kids and you want to teach them from the get-go about the wealth of planting things and the benefit of that, grab the book. Roy likes it. My partner here, Roy.
I read it as soon as I came in, and I think doing things for children at that young age, that just gives them solid direction. Plus, it gets the parents involved because – When I was reading it, there's things that I would think about that I'd want to share with kids. So it's just a tremendous approach.
And it's published by Charles Bridge. I have the link on my website, mikenovak.net. Go to this week's show and scroll down to Old Manhattan Has Some Farms, E-I-E-I Grow. It's kind of hard to miss. Mm-hmm. And I hope folks take advantage of that. Susan, you got to keep in touch. And when you do another one, let me know.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for having me on the show.
My pleasure. Oh, I have a real quick question. Did you get deluged with rain? What's your story?
We certainly got a lot of rain, and of course, it being California, you know, we felt like, oh my gosh, it's the cataclysmic floods of the century. But I guess I'm speaking from the point of view of someone who wasn't living by a hill that could slide down on them, as some poor individuals were. But any rain is good in California right now.
Absolutely true. Well, continued success to you. I hope you do very well with the book, and we'll talk again in the future.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. It's the Mike Novak Show on WCPT, AM and FM. In just 1 minute, our feel-good story of the week.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
This is Mike Novak. Enjoy local food all winter long at Winter Farmers Markets, hosted by 15 different Chicago faith congregations on select Saturdays and Sundays from November through March. Your purchase of local sustainably produced food helps support regional farmers. The markets are organized by Faith in Place, a nonprofit that inspires people of diverse faiths to care for the earth through connection, education, and advocacy. Go to faithinplace.org and click on Winter Farmers Markets for a schedule and to learn more.
Okay, we're into All Skate. Here we go. Let's bring in, well, first of all, I should mention that you might remember last week that we had a call when I was talking to Green Diva Meg, and I mentioned it earlier, the guy named Steven, and he was frustrated that not enough things were happening in the world, and he wanted to do something. That guy is back right now. Steven, how are you?
Good, good. How are you? I'd like to say that after that call, I did do something to get more active. There was a protest going on in Washington, D.C., protesting against the Food Accurate and Safety Labeling Act. Basically, the act states that the GMO companies do not have to label their products at all. The activists were calling this a dark act, deny Americans the right to know. And the experience was tremendous. There wasn't as many people that you'd like to see there, but
there never is, Stephen. That's part of the problem. Except for that, the climate march in New York, which was fabulous. Most of these things, they're just not as many people as you think they're going to go.
They need to make them affordable and entertaining. And one of the ways they made it affordable is the Organic Food Association sponsored the majority of the cost for this bus. So my ticket price is only $35. It was a hell of a trip. 26 hours out of 35, you're sleeping on a bus. But you got to go and voice your opinion, which was, I believe, is direly important. And I think if we make this attractive to the colleges, the problem was, is a lot of these people that had to go, they had to take off work, they had kids, they had responsibilities, they had a lot of things in their life they had to take away from in order to go do this. And college kids, they miss classes for a movie. I mean, if you can make it attractive and affordable for college kids, throw a concert in there, throw other type of, incentives for kids to get involved. Only 12% of us voted this last midterm, and it's because we feel like we're voting for the lesser of two evils, and we need to get both the evils out. I mean,
the problem is, I understand that. We got to get that, but it's a vicious circle here because, when fewer people vote, the worst people get in, and then they manage to consolidate power, and then fewer people vote for that. I mean, then it just gets worse and worse. Everybody's got to get out and vote. But the point I want to make is that here you were, you called and you said, what do I do? And I said, I don't know, go downtown, go to Open Gov Hack Night and participate. And instead, you got on a bus and you went to D.C. I am so impressed, Stephen. That was just amazing.
I wish more people would look at.
Oh, no. No, come on. Okay, we're going to try to get him back, but we've only got a minute. So I don't think that, well, you get the gist, is that Steve, I don't know why the line just went dead.
Maybe it's a plot. It's a conspiracy. All right, it gives me a chance to say goodbye to you, Roy. But, I mean, how inspiring is that?
Mike, thanks for having me. That was, you have to take an active role. In everything we do, you have to
I
be.
Know, and the guy, instead of, he decided to do something. Are you back with me there, Stephen?
Yeah, I'm back in.
Good.
All right, you got like 15 seconds, though, so.
No problem. The point is, like, I got more flack from my friends and family than positive reaction. They thought it was a waste of time, and that's where we need to shift, is put the ecology in front of the economy, and we're not doing that. And that's what I'm trying to be a part of, I guess.
Yeah, you're my hero of the week, Stephen. You are my hero of the week. Thanks, man. Thanks for doing that. I appreciate it.
I'll be there Tuesday. I'm not hoping to hack Gov Night. I got a couple of ideas.
Sounds good. All right. Roy, thank you. Pick up Roy's book.
Mike, great being here.
The No Maintenance Perennial Garden. You're an inspiration to me, too.